who is new is feeling very welcome, because we do want you to feel welcome. We want you to get involved with any of the activities that we have upcoming, some of the things I talked about this morning or what might be on your announcement sheet. Go to the social hall, there's a welcome table. It's got the blue tablecloth on it. You can go there after the service. You can ask questions. You can sign up for an upcoming new to UU lunch and learn more about who we are. So, in that spirit of hospitality and welcoming this morning, I challenge you once again to find someone around you who you don't know particularly well and say good morning.
Everybody, my name is Eleanor Nunez, and I am the music director here at UUCF. And for our opening hymn, we will be singing You've Got a Friend. So find a friend near you, find an LGBTQ friend, make everybody feel welcome and happy, and let's rise in mind, body, or spirit and join us in singing. When you're down and troubled, and you need a helping hand, and nothing is going right, close your eyes and think of me, and soon I will be there to brighten up even your dark nights. You just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. Winter, spring, summer, fall, all you got to do is call, and I'll be to know that you got a friend. When people can be so cold, they'll hurt you and desert you. They'll take your soul if you let them. Oh, but don't you let them. You just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running. You got a friend.
Good morning. My name is Megan Smock, and I will be your worship associate today. And no, I'm not playing Angry Birds on my phone. I am legally blind, and this is how I can read things, so I can enlarge them. Our call to worship this morning was actually written by our own Reverend Jason Cook. Let's come together in the spirit of worship. Come into this place, knowing it is a space of peace. Come into this place, knowing it is a space of safety. Come into this space, knowing it is a space of hope. You who enter tossed by the tumult of life, know that you are welcome here. You who enter with trepidation and uncertainty, know that you are welcome here. You who enter disillusioned and weary, know that you are welcome here. For this sanctuary is a holy place, built of the stronger than brick and mortar, built to welcome the sacred and hold it and us in its cradle. Sometimes the woes of the world cry out to us, the injustices of society, the scars of old wounds, the denial of identities, of authority, of love, but not here. Not in this place, not now. Let us look toward the stories of saints and martyrs of old. Let us be inspired by wisdom that has been forgotten in the turning pages of time. Let us fill this holy place with blessings, with the desire to, with the divine gift of love. Gather in reverence in this space for you, whoever you are welcome here. Gather in joy in this space, for the blessings of the Spirit are yours. Gather in community in this space, for acceptance of one another is our call. Hear the voices of the past ring out. Love one another. Hear the voices of the present sing out. Love one another. Hear the voices of the future call to us. Love one another. For this is our call as people of conscience, our call to life, to all that is holy. Let us begin this sacred time together, a time of worship, of blessing, of hope, and healing. I now invite you to join with me in saying the words on the screen. This flame affirms the light of truth, the warmth of community, and the spirit of commitment. Love is the doctrine that we share. The quest for truth is our sacrament, and service is our prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom, to serve human need. Thus do we covenant one another. And I now invite Mark Umbriaco and Patrick Duffy to light our chalice. Today's food challenge for this month for Pathways of Hope is jelly. And each Sunday, our children collect food donations to provide food for those in need. I now invite the children to come up front to sit for the Time of All Ages presentation before going to their classes.
Everyone, my name is Rachel White, and I'm the Director of Religious Education here at UUCF. So this past Friday, March 8th, was International Women's Day. It is a global day celebrated to celebrate the social, economic, cultural, and political achievements of women. The history of International Women's Day dates back to the early 1900s. When women all over the world were becoming more and more vocal about the inequalities they were facing on a daily basis. This led to 15,000, and you can see some pictures from that day actually, 15,000 women in New York marching through New York in 1908 demanding shorter hours, better pay, and voting rights, because that back then women didn't have the right to vote. Then in 1910 in Copenhagen, the International Conference for Working Women was held, and it decided that every year in every country there should be a day where women press for their rights, where they stand up and say, this is not okay, this is what we need. And then the very next year in 1911, 17 countries celebrated International Women's Day. And today it is an official holiday in 30 countries, although it is a public holiday in many more countries all around the world. Women and men take this day as an opportunity to raise awareness of the inequalities women still face all over the world. And as we reflect on that, I also want to take a moment to recognize a few women throughout history who have achieved amazing accomplishment, oftentimes while facing incredible obstacles. So I'll just name a few and give a brief explanation of their achievements. Jane Austen, many of you might have heard of her. She's a famous author. She wrote several books, including Pride and Prejudice, one of my favorites. And she wrote at a time when female writers were not encouraged. And this helped pave the way for many more female authors like J.K. Rowling, who also is another one on this list, of J.K. Rowling, who has written an amazing series that I think a lot of you know. But do you know what J.K. Rowling wrote? Harry Potter, that's right. Indira Gandhi, she was the first female prime minister of India. She was in power between 1966 to 1977 and again from 1980 to 1984. Malala Yousafzai, a lot of you might know her. She is a Pakistani schoolgirl who defied threats of the Taliban to campaign for the right to education. She survived being shot in the head by the Taliban and has become a global advocate for women's rights, especially the right to education. Oprah Winfrey, she is an American talk show host and businesswoman. She was the first woman to own her own talk show. Susan B. Anthony, also one of my favorite people in history. She was an American campaigner against slavery and the promotion of women's rights and workers' rights. And finally, Marie Curie, she was a scientist. She was the first woman to receive a Nobel Prize and the first person to win a Nobel Prize for two separate categories. So again, as we reflect that this past Friday was Women's International Day, let's remember all these amazing women that we can look back at and look up to and set the example for us to continue to achieve great things despite what we may face in our future.
One of the ways that we build, not just build, but nurture and nourish our community is by sharing what might be happening in our lives of significance, whether it's the great joys that we have or those sorrows that sometimes weigh us down. So if you do have a brief personal joy or sorrow you'd like to share, I invite you forward this morning, and our worship associate will light a candle in acknowledgement of that.
My name is Sharon. I'm lighting a candle for a beautiful blonde husky who died in my arms this morning after a hit and run. I pulled over, and this candle is also for Lauren, who's the other woman who pulled over, and we diverted traffic on Associated, and you know how fast they go. And I was able, and then somebody else brought a towel and warmed the husky, and I was able to do chest compressions for about 3 minutes before he died.
I want to light a candle for my childhood friend, Elizabeth. Elizabeth and I grew up in the Presbyterian Church together, going to youth group and choir practice, and I grew up and became a Unitarian, and she grew up and became a Methodist minister. And she also came out as a lesbian, like I did, and she has been very involved with the United Methodist Church, with the movement to have them accept and acknowledge gay and lesbian marriages and clergy. And I know that she was at the conference where that was defeated. And so I just want to lift her up, and her wife, Sherry. And she's a deeply spiritual person, and a very, I know her congregation loves her, and she's a wonderful leader for them. And I'm so sorry that the church is not acknowledging, you know, her.
Good morning. My name is Ruth Rankamov, and I was part of this congregation about 7 years ago before my husband and I moved up to San Jose, and we recently bought a home, and so we're back here and coming regularly. I was raised as a Catholic, and so in my personal experience, coming to church or any sort of church events was a time of guilt and a time of shame. And this morning, my husband and I were running late, and I am a person with anxiety, but as I walked in here 4 minutes late, I feared nothing. I didn't fear judgment. I feared nothing. I just said, you know what? No one's going to look at me with shame. Yeah, I'm going to have to walk in front of someone to get to the middle row, and that's okay. So I'm just so joyful to be back here among a congregation that's so loving and accepting and gives me that spiritual home that I've been needing.
As always, we know there is so much more happening in the lives of the people in this room, so much that is unspoken, and I encourage you to get to know people maybe who you haven't had a chance to talk to very often, that person you always see who sits on the other side of the sanctuary. Find them in the social hall afterward and strike up a conversation.
So this past March 7th was what was known as the feast day of Perpetua and Felicitas. Now these were two Christian saints and martyrs. They died in the year 203. Little bit of a different story, right? And these women are honored in the Catholic, Orthodox, Lutheran churches, and Anglican communion. This text, which is called the Passion of Saint Perpetua and Saint Felicitas and their companions, it's one of the oldest and most notable Christian texts. It survived in both Latin and Greek. And the amazing thing about it is it's an authentic prison diary, as far as we know, of a young woman and her slave, the bond between them. And then along with that came eyewitness testimony. So I thought it was fitting that the celebration of these two women take place at the time of International Women's Day, and also as we consider the Christian churches who currently struggle with LGBTQ issues. And we see that what is so often left out of the story in churches today is that these two women were united in a bond of love that has been read by many throughout the centuries as a lesbian bond. So I invite you now into a time of reflection and prayer as we take in the story of these two women. Perpetua and Felicitas, arrested and then executed for the crime of being Christian. These two women exhibit a bond of love toward each other that people throughout history have seen as romantic. In paintings and art, some of what we've seen in our slideshow this morning, in poetry and prose, dating from long ago to present day, the two women have been seen as lovers. May we too invite in the reality of all those who have loved one another throughout history in all the combinations and configurations that love has come in. These two women, so strong that in the text they are lauded as the most manly of soldiers, defying gender expectations of the time, described as true heroes, taking the role usually reserved for men. At the time of execution, the bond between them is strong. They stand together, joyful, not fearful. Stripped, bound, and brought into a Roman arena, there is every indication that they should be degraded in that moment, but they are not. And the crowd realizes it. And in that moment, they are covered with tunics. Their dignity is so great that even their captors cannot deny it. Once the attack begins, a wounded Perpetua rises up from where she has fallen and approaches Felicitas and helps her rise. And suddenly the bloodthirsty Roman crowd is quiet. Quiet in the presence of love, of union. And they share a kiss in that moment. I invite you into a time of quiet, a time of reflection. The stories of history are told by those who have power. And this morning we consider the stories of those who are often ignored, silenced. Silenced because sometimes their stories are too dangerous to those who hold power. And perhaps you, for whatever reason, for who you are, for your gifts, for your talents, for your wisdom, perhaps you have felt at some point in your life that your story has not been wanted or received or invited in. Perhaps you know someone whose story has not been met with respect, with honor. This morning we make a joyful noise as we celebrate all those stories, stories too often left in silence, as we call upon the spirit of love to honor all who come before. May it be so.
By John Boswell. Although many questions remain about same-sex unions in pre-modern Europe, much has also emerged with reasonable clarity. Such unions, in varied forms, were widespread in the ancient world, where heterosexual matrimony tended to be viewed as a dynastic or business arrangement, and love, in such relationships, where it occurred, arose following the coupling. Ordinary men and women were more likely to invest feelings the 20th century would call romantic in same-sex relationships. Either passionate friendships or more structured and institutional unions, as exemplified by the recognized couples of Crete or Scythia, the swearing of perpetual love among other Greeks, and the social phenomenon and legal stratagem of quote, brotherhood, unquote, among the Romans. Since the advent of Christianity only exacerbated doubts about the emotional significance of matrimony, there was little pressure to reevaluate such attitudes. But passionate friendships, especially among paired saints and holy virgins, continued to exercise a fascination over the early Christians. Still, residents of the ancient world, and in time, were transformed into official relationships of union, performed in churches and blessed by priests. In many ways, from a contemporary point of view, the most pressing question is probably whether the Christian ceremony of same-sex union functioned in the past as a gay marriage ceremony. It is clear that it did, although the nature and purposes of every sort of marriage have varied widely over time. In almost every age and place, the ceremony fulfilled what most people today regard as the essence of marriage. A permanent romantic commitment between two people witnessed and recognized by the community. The official teaching of the Roman Catholic Church has been that two parties marry each other. The priest merely acts as a witness. If the couple intend to be married, they are. By contrast, in the Eastern Orthodox Church, the priest does perform the ceremony. And in all known cases, priests performed the same-sex union. Such are the historical facts. Their social, moral, and political significance is arguable, but considerable. Even persons who argue that same-sex couples should now have the right to contract marriage like anyone else are apt to view such unions as an exotic indulgence of our time, a novel experiment in a liberal society. Recognizing that many, probably most, earlier Western societies institutionalized some form of romantic same-sex union gives us a much more accurate view of human romantic relationships.
The year 303. The place, what is now known as Syria. Sergius and Bacchus are high-ranking young soldiers in the Roman army. They are also secretly Christians. Being a Christian is not easy in these times. Sergius and Bacchus have to live a life in the shadows, gathering secretly with other Christians and even having a ceremony that unites them in the rite of adelphopoiesis, brother-making, a kind of early Christian same-sex marriage. The two are bonded together, and that bond extends to their faith. Together, they decide to not attend sacrifices to Zeus, the consequences be what they may. Sometimes consequences are hard to face. There's always that moment. At some point after meeting someone, sooner or later they ask me the dreaded question, "And what do you do?" It's a hard question to answer. I could just say I'm a minister to a congregation, and sometimes I do. But sometimes you don't want to do that. For instance, on a long plane flight. You have to be careful when you are facing hours next to a stranger who knows your clergy. You might start getting quizzed about why this or that went wrong in their life, and the whole time you're thinking, "Oh my goodness, I feel bad for you, truly I do, but this flight is 6 hours and I was hoping to sleep, and I'm on vacation after all."
And no, I probably can't quote that piece of scripture that you don't remember any of the words from or what biblical book it even came out of. But more than plane flights, there's that face people make when they're processing what I do for a living. But, and you might have seen this too, when you tell people that you attend church, if you tell anybody at all. There's that quick reassessment that ever so slightly rearranges their features. And sometimes it looks a little like, gee, I thought you were pretty normal and with it, but I guess I have to reevaluate you because you're one of those church people. Or there's the other look, which may even be worse. It's the one that says, oh, you're a churchgoer. I know all about that. And suddenly they start talking to you in a different way, as though you're both in cahoots in some pious way that assumes a lot that's often inaccurate about who you are and what you believe. And the truth is, sometimes I find it hard to be associated with the vocation of clergy or even the idea of church community at all, because there has been so much that has not been affirming for people that goes along with it. Case in point, and I hold a lot of compassion for folks in this community, the recent vote by the United Methodist Church to not allow LGBTQ clergy or to honor same-sex marriages. I know that has been a difficult, difficult conversation for them. But I think when a mainstream, historically progressive Christian church makes this kind of decision in 2019, it can be a challenge for the rest of us to even admit we are part of a faith-based community, especially those of us who already identify with Unitarian Universalism, which lies somewhere on the outskirts of most people's definition of church or religion. It was a Somerset Maugham in Of Human Bondage who famously said about us, a Unitarian very earnestly disbelieves in almost everything that anybody else believes, and he has a very lively sustaining faith in he doesn't quite know what. We UUs tend to live in this sort of gray area where agnostics and theists and atheists gather in respect for the reverence of gathering, but we'll still argue about words like reverence or what to call that gathering. And God knows, not that we all believe in God, let's make that clear. God knows we aren't like other churches, and we don't even like that word church anyway, but we sure as hell, which we're also pretty sure that we collectively don't believe in, we sure as hell won't give up our right to use the word church even if we don't like it. What do we call this? Ambivalence, maybe? Our ambivalence can make us want to throw in the towel. But back to Sergius and Bacchus, who didn't throw in the towel. They kept to their beliefs and to their commitment to one another. Having refused to honor Roman customs, their secret Christianity is revealed. The men are arrested and paraded through the streets in women's clothing in an unsuccessful effort to humiliate them. Early accounts say that these two men respond by chanting that they are dressed as brides of Christ, and they tell their captors that women's dress never stopped women from worshiping Christ, so it won't stop them. Then Sergius and Bacchus are separated and beaten severely, and Bacchus dies. Christianity, especially in its cultural ties to dominance in the West, has been used in the name of so much oppression in more recent centuries that sometimes we forget some of these early martyrs whose lives were snuffed out because they refused to deny their faith. As we talked about in our reflection earlier, Perpetua and Felicitas were two other such early martyrs, another same-sex couple, or interpreted as so, like Sergius and Bacchus. And we take this morning to acknowledge what so many have forgotten, that throughout history there have been people who we would now say fall somewhere on the LGBTQ spectrum who were also venerated for their role in their faith tradition. There are folks out there who wanted to deny this. They often require a level of so-called proof for gay or lesbian relationships or identity that they would never ask for in identifying historical heterosexual relationships. And of course, the truth is we really can't know exactly how someone from the past might identify in 2019. But we can know that scholars are sure that some of these early church figures were involved in loving same-sex relationships, sometimes having been celebrated in a ceremony of union by the church itself. So that night after Bacchus's execution, early manuscripts say he appears to Sergius in a vision. Dressed once again as a soldier, Bacchus's face is radiant like an angel's. He urges Sergius not to give up, assuring him that they will be reunited in heaven as lovers. And his statement is unique in the history of martyrs. Usually the promised reward is union with God, not with a lover. Over the next several days, Sergius is tortured and eventually beheaded. His tomb becomes a famous shrine. And for nearly 1,000 years, the couple is revered as the official patrons of the Byzantine army. Many early churches are named after Sergius, sometimes with Bacchus. They are venerated as martyrs by the Catholic, Eastern Orthodox, and Oriental Orthodox churches. Representation is important, especially in the context of religious communities. It's important that people, however they identify, know that they are welcome, that they are whole, that they are not alone, that they have a friend, as we sang about in our opening hymn. When we consider that there were same-sex couples, like Perpetua and Felicitas, Sergius and Bacchus, who were venerated at one time and now ignored by some who call themselves Christians, we realize how much human hypocrisy and bias sometimes gets in the way of inclusion. When 1969, the same year that New York's Stonewall riots launched the modern gay liberation movement, the Roman Catholic Church stripped Sergius and Bacchus from its liturgical calendar. Supposedly, they were decanonized due to lack of historical evidence, but some see it as an anti-gay action since they clearly had churches dedicated to them long before medieval times. Sergius and Bacchus continue to be popular saints with Christian Arabs and now among LGBTQ Christians and allies. So let the stories of these two men and these two women be a beacon for us in these times, a testament to the power of the uniting spirit that draws us to one another, to faith, to principles, to love, wherever and however we find it. You know, I wish we didn't have to carry complicated feelings about what it means to be part of a faith community, that we didn't have to worry about what others might assume that going to church means, that it might mean that we're anti-gay or anti-woman or anti-diversity or all the baggage that often comes with that, no matter what kind of church we go to. But the reality is that we will have to continue explaining ourselves. And for we Unitarian Universalists, that's not an easy thing to do. To say, yes, we are a religious community of sorts, but not religion like you're necessarily thinking. We're an irreligious religious community with a long history of making a home for those rejected by other religious communities. It was in 1979, this is about 40 years ago now, right? Reverend Douglas Morgan Strong became the first out gay person to be called to be minister of a Unitarian Universalist church. And that was followed the next year by a resolution at General Assembly to settle gay, lesbian, and bisexual ministers in congregations. And then in 1984, a UU General Assembly resolution affirmed the practice of UU clergy performing services of union between same-sex couples. So we've been ahead of the game on this compared to a lot of other denominations, and I am proud of us for that. But lest we think we are so far ahead of the United Methodists or whoever, many of whom, as I said, are in that community, are upset by the latest turn in this conversation. But even this week, our own magazine, the UU World, printed an article that have many in the trans community and their allies upset. This article, it doesn't center on the perspectives of trans people, but it's framed around the perspectives of those who are not trans, trying to understand trans. And this hasn't gone over well in our community because we have trans people here who say, if you're going to write an article about us, why don't you talk to us rather than what people think about us in our community? And, you know, I think it shows that when you preach inclusion, but your policies and or your actions result in exclusion, whether intentional or not, you're showing who you really are and where you are in all of this work. And I think that in the end, what happens in our community or in the Methodist community shows us all for what we are, human, with all the flaws and foibles that come with that. But I find hope in that, because being human also gives us the capacity to change for the better. So I have hope for our friends in other communities who are struggling with the LGBTQ letters. We need to be here to offer support as they make this journey, not condemnation, as we recognize we UUs are making our own journey toward justice. And I think finally this, for me, plays into a deeper understanding of our existence here on this planet. That no theology that shuts out some aspect of life or identity can thrive in the long run. I believe life wants to live. Ever seen a dandelion growing up from a crack in the sidewalk? Ever sit beside the bed of someone in a hospital who seems like they've had everything taken away from them, and yet they speak of life? The life lived or the life they still want to live. Life embraces life. Life holds on. Life wants to live. Any belief system that is not aligned with that is a destructive belief system, destructive theology. Theologies that go against life are ones that shut out the realities of LGBTQ lives, shut out the realities of the existence of women's lives, of the lives and worth of those who are disabled or poor or of different races or whatever. They are ones that deny history, that suppress stories of those like Perpetua and Felicitas and Sergius and Bacchus. So this is what I vow to claim today, no matter who asks me, whether it's my dentist, which is always hard when they start asking you questions when you're or that person next to me on the plane. I vow to tell them that I'm part of a faith community, and no, it isn't easy to explain who we are. But I can say this. Unitarian Universalists believe in life and the power of love, of living our true selves and learning to love one another. And that, at the end of the day, is the message that I believe so many have lived and died for. Not just the two couples we've talked about today, but all the people throughout history who have lived and died for truth and justice. May we never forget that we are part of a long line of people who came before, and may we now live into the legacy they leave us with our whole hearts. And in so doing, may we create space for whatever and whoever is yet to come.
Our offering is a vital way we show our gratitude for this community. By giving to UUCF, we know that this community of caring will continue to do its good work in the world. We thank you for your generosity.
For our closing hymn, we will be singing number 170, "We Are a Gentle, Angry People." So please rise in mind, body, or spirit and join us in singing.